Welcome to today's AvWeb AudioCast for this Friday, September 1st, 2006, sponsored by Aviation Consumer, the consumer resource for pilots and aircraft owners. I'm Mike Blakeney reporting for AvWeb's Audio News. As we carried in yesterday's edition of AvWeb, details emerging about the crash of Comair Flight 5191 paint a picture of a compounding series of small mistakes that led to a catastrophe. John Golia, a professor of aerospace science at St. Louis University, is a former NTSB crash investigator who tells AvWeb's Russ Niles how these types of investigations work and why he thinks all the interest in the control tower staffing and performance is irrelevant in this case.
John, what's the latest on the Lexington crash and what are you hearing from your colleagues in the industry?
Well, what's going on now is Debbie Herzman, one of the board members, made a statement today about the controller only having 2 hours sleep. I guess it was last night she made that. But this whole discussion around the controller is sort of a red herring, because the controller is under no obligation by any of the rules to watch the airplane taxi into position on the runway. And he gave his clearance. The clearance was proper. We have a professional flight crew, and they made a mistake. Now, there's factors involved with that, with, you know, the time of day, the fast taxi, because there was no traffic. One of them is obviously was inputting things into the flight director system. We have a taxiway that's been changed. Add to the confusion, we had runway lights. The centerline lights were expected to be out on the runway 22. He was not tipped off, if you will, by the fact that the lights were not on. I mean, you have all these little things that normally wouldn't mean anything. But boy, they came together this time in a very negative way.
Well, that's the classic scenario, right? The little things tend to add up. It's rarely in an accident that it's one sort of cataclysmic thing. It's usually a series of factors over a period of time. Is that your experience?
That's what we've been calling the chain of events for a long time. And in this particular accident, the chain of events was made up of all little ones, which is really a tragedy.
Okay, well, what about the fact that the tower wasn't staffed by two controllers? And the FAA's put a second controller in there now.
If there were two controllers in the cab, one of them would have been on radar, one of them would have been doing ground control. And again, there's no obligation for the controller to just sit there and watch this one guy taxi out in the position, especially with an airport that's empty. This was a 6 o'clock departure, and there's another 6 o'clock departure. And to work the second one that I just mentioned was running a little late. And if they had called for clearance, his attention would have been diverted away from where the accident airplane was. Anyway.
What are the investigators looking at now? Like, where will they be in the investigation? Even though it seems fairly clear what happened, what are they looking at?
Well, you know, the rules that the NTSB uses have been around for a long time, and they were modified many times early on. We have a very conservative set of procedures. Just because we think we know what we found doesn't mean that all the other work stops. So right now, today, here it is 5 days later, there's people out there that are documenting everything that they find, which will be used later because you never know when you get a surprise. For example, we thought that the Emory air freight crash in Sacramento, California, was caused by misloading of the airplane. And it was many months later before we realized that maintenance had misrigged the airplane. And because they had done all this documentation work, that's what led to the solving of that accident.
Well, how long do you figure it's going to take before we know finally and for true what happened to the Comair flight?
Well, they always try to get these things wrapped up in a year. You know, assuming that what we believe now is the case is just a bunch of simple errors that led up to a disaster, they probably will be able to keep to that. But the agency has been very much resource-strained for a while, and they've been hard-pressed to make that year on some other accidents. But I think this one they probably will be able to.
Okay, well, what can we learn from a mishap like this? I mean, without prejudging the results.
Well, certainly we need to continue the work that's been going on for a number of years into human error. What makes people make a mistake, you know, and we need to also include the maintenance and flight attendants in that research to find out why people make mistakes. I mean, we're ignoring the maintenance people over and over. And I just love how the press and so many people saying we've gone 5 years without a crash, how short their memory is, because in January of 2003, a 121 carrier, Air Midwest, crashed in Charlotte and killed everybody on board. when the body count wasn't high enough, it was only 20 people.
Believe it or not, that's the FAA's distinction. The FAA is saying that there hasn't been a major crash. AvWeb always mentions a Charlotte crash when that statistic is rolled out. But I agree with you. It seems a little bit strange.
Yeah, well, they don't like to hear me because when they say it, I challenge them right away. It gets back to the old story, you know, numbers don't lie, but liars use numbers.
So what's the FAA going to do about this? I mean, the FAA has admitted that it didn't have enough controllers on position, and whether or not that's a factor in this particular accident, it certainly plays into the political issues that are at play in the FAA at the moment.
Well, there's no question about that. The controversy around that staffing level is going to continue with us for quite some time. But if one takes a really unbiased look at it, in this case, I don't believe that the staffing level had anything to do with it. I mean, it certainly wasn't control of workload. I think he had 6 flights the entire night to work. So it wasn't like he was just struggling controlling these airplanes because there just was no traffic. But from a public policy point of view, certainly the FAA is going to have to deal with not only the perception, but how we handle it. And, of course, it gets down to dollars. How are we going to handle the cost of providing air traffic controllers? This administration wants to contract them out in some towers. I don't know what's right or wrong there, but that debate needs to go on and needs to be resolved.
John Golia, a former NTSB crash investigator, commenting on the crash of Comair Flight 5191. As we mentioned, AvWeb has extensive coverage of the aftermath of that crash in its Thursday edition. Just go to www.avweb.com. Also making news this week is speculation by the New York Times that the emerging competition between very light jets won't be fought in the boardrooms, but in the bathrooms. And it's VLJs that don't have an onboard potty that will be the losers. We'll also fill in the details on the latest deployment of a Cirrus parachute by a passenger and not the pilot. And there's an amazing story out of Nevada about the collision between a Hawker bizjet and a glider that has a miraculously happy ending. All this and more at www.avweb.com. To comment on today's audiocast, you can drop us an email at audionews@avweb.com. Today's report was sponsored by Aviation Consumer, the consumer resource for pilots and aircraft owners. Look for AvWeb's next audiocast on Monday, September 4th. I'm Mike Blakeney reporting. Thanks for listening to AvWeb's Audio News.